Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 14, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Tasmad ekena manasa bhagavan sattvatam patihi shrotavya kirtitavyascha deyaf pujascha nityada. Therefore, with one appointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. Purport: if realization of the Absolute Truth is the ultimate aim of life, it must be carried out by all means. In any one of the above mentioned castes and orders of life, the four processes, namely glorifying, hearing, remembering, and worshipping, are general occupations. Without these principles of life, no one can exist. Activities of the living being involve engagements in these four different principles of life. Especially in modern society, all activities are more or less dependent on hearing and glorifying. Any man from any social status becomes a well-known man in human society within a very short time if he is simply glorified truly or falsely in the daily newspapers. Sometimes political leaders of a particular party are also advertised by newspaper propaganda, and by such a method of glorification, an insignificant man becomes an important man within no time. But such propaganda by false glorification of an unqualified person cannot bring about any good, either for the particular man or for the society. There may be some temporary reactions to such propaganda, but there are no permanent effects. Therefore, such activities are a waste of time. The actual object of glorification is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created everything manifested before us. We have broadly discussed this from the beginning of the Janmadyasya Shloka of this Bhagavatam. The tendency to glorify others or hear others must be turned to the real object of glorification, the Supreme Being, and that will bring happiness. Tasmade kena manasa bhagavan sattvatang patihi shrotavya kirtitavyascha deyaf pujascha nityada. Glorification, kirtan. Kirtan means glorification. That is going on. Srila Prabhupada points this out, and especially in modern society, there's much glorification of people who are not really worthy of glorification. Sports stars, film stars, political stars, they don't offer anything of permanent value or actually have any real value at all to anything or anyone. I've just been going through some conversations of Srila Prabhupada in 1976, and there was a lot of hope in India at that time that the new government will uplift India. The Indira Gandhi's government had fallen, and there was a pro-Hindu government. The BJP hadn't formed at that time. It was the Janta Party. And Prabhupada, he wasn't enthusiastic. He said the same thing's going on. I remember also prior to the last general election, how some of our devotees were getting all enthusiastic and about a certain party, being elected and how all of a sudden it's going to bring Swargaloka to, or Vaikuntha to India, but the reality is not so. So Srila Prabhupada points this out, that even an insignificant people become important by the method of glorification. And he says newspaper propaganda, nowadays it's internet also, and so many things, TV and so many things. And some people, understanding this, try to promote themselves. You can even get a publicity agency to promote yourself, whatever it is you're doing. And in one, yeah, we're also in Krishna conscious, but we're trying to promote glorification of Krishna. That is the point. Glorification of gurus is central part of Vedic culture, but because they glorify Krishna. Acharyang mang vijaniyan navamanyeta karhi chitna martya buddhya suyeta saravadeva mayo guru. Krishna says that one should not disrespect the acharya or think him an ordinary person who's subject to death like everyone else. One should not be envious of him because one should know that he is non-different from myself and a representative of all the godly people. So it's a very high level of respect. You can't get higher than that. And actually Muslims, they complain. They don't like that when they see bowing down before anyone, even your father and mother. They don't like that. Although I see in Bangladesh, the Muslims still do to their father and mother. Their culture is deep there. But the idea that someone else but Allah should be glorified is to them obnoxious, haram, horrible. But then Krishna himself wants to see his devotees glorified. But it becomes something of a paradox, in as or it's exploitable, we could say, because it's just like Krishna likes his devotees to be happy. I'm a devotee, so I should be happy. Therefore, bring me all the sense gratification. Bring all the daughters of my disciples to enjoy, and then I'll be happy. There's such an idea is there among some gurus, and their followers also subscribe to that. But happy means happy in Krishna's service. The devotee is always trying to make Krishna happy, and Krishna is always trying to make the devotee happy. But there's nothing personal or selfish therein. So similarly, we find many gurus in India, they propagate this idea that, well, guru is as good as God, guru is God. So promote the guru and practically forget God. But this is a distortion of the actual principle. Guru is as good as God because he is completely absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and gives Krishna, Krishna bhakti, hoi jaha hoite. Krishna bhakti can be had from him. Now he teaches this, that with one appointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, not himself. The center is Krishna. Bhagavan Satvatang Patihi is mentioned here. Bhagavan, who is the Lord of the devotees, not that the Guru is the Lord of Bhagavan. He may be in the sense of rasa. He may take that role, but ontologically, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we are all his servants. And the Guru teaches this. And actually, there are a few times in the history of ISKCON when Srila Prabhupada became extremely angry and disturbed with the behavior of some of his disciples. And the first time was when some of them started to advertise that Prabhupada is Krishna himself. And he rejected not fully rejected, but he sent some of his leading disciples. He sent them out. You go out, get out. Out, he sent them out to preach, but he said they couldn't stay in temples and this and that. He reformed them, actually. Didn't totally reject them, but he was not at all happy with promoting that misconception. So very clearly we have to do, as Srila Prabhupada did, if we're his followers, which is to put Krishna in the center and teach what Krishna teaches. And, yeah, make Krishna consciousness, not anything else, consciousness. In our movement at the present time, for the last several years, there's been a lot of advertisement about how ISKCON is doing very good work in welfare work for the people. And it all started here in Bengaluru with someone sitting on a hill had the idea to start feeding the children, and then people will like it. And if they like us, then they'll give us money, then we can build more temples and so on and so on. And we can hire people to go and preach in the colleges and recruit more men to go out and collect more donations for feeding the children. And it goes on like this. It might seem like a very good idea, get money and people like us, but the problem is, or you may say, well, what's the harm? You see, people give us money and they like us. And well, the harm is that the people think of ISKCON nowadays, many people think of it more as a movement that feeds children and also does things like gives away pairs of shoes to all the children. That's also going on. And builds temples. Well, what's the purpose of the temple? It's not so clearly known. In other words, Krishna is not clearly in the center. And then so many advertisements, they give money for this and help the children so they can go to school and build the nation. Where's Krishna? Well, Krishna's deliberately kept out of it all because if you put Krishna, then people will understand that actually we're devotees of Krishna and we're not welfare. Our main concern is not feeding the children. So we have to put feeding the children in the center and advertise like that. But sadhus, they are meant for, especially in the line of Srila Prabhupada, or any bona fide Vaishnava Acharya, they're meant for promoting Krishna. So you may say, well, it's okay, you see, outside we do this and that, but when you come to our temple, we do kirtan and we preach only Krishna, but it's supposed to be outside also. What's the harm? The harm is that our time and our energy, which should be used, ekena manasa, wholly, solely, one-pointedly, for promoting Krishna and Krishna consciousness, huge amount of energy and time is diverted, and the attention of people, which is aka supposed to be manasa, we're talking about mind attention, it becomes diverted to something else. And we fail to distinguish between reality and it. We're supposed to give people the knowledge by which they can distinguish between reality and illusion, and give people this the real solution to all problems. What is the solution to so many hungry children? The solution is that you don't send them to school and and collect money to feed them. The solution is to establish Daiva Varnashram Dharma. Instead of promoting this industrial, technological society in which there will be so many disturbances and discrepancies, the solution is, well, the ultimate solution is always to remember Krishna, and the social solution is to establish Daiva Varnashram Dharma. Daiva Varnashram Dharma means Varnashram Dharma with clearly centered on Krishna, as distinguished from the Asuric Varnashram, which is the caste system based on privilege by birth, without keeping Krishna clearly in the center. So one of the lines that Srila Prabhupada preached continually is that Krishna consciousness is the solution to all world problems. It's not just for some individuals to chant Hare Krishna and leave this world and go to the spiritual world, but it's meant for solving all problems. And that's right there from the Bhagavad Gita. Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyadana sambhavaha. Yagya bhavati parjanyo yagya karma samudbhavaha. People need food. What is their main need of physical need? Food, of course, you can say water, light, heat, air, and all these things, but those things are there without any human endeavor. But food, that requires krishi, first of all, krishi, farming. But even before the even the farming, that requires rain. So rain, how does that come? Yajna is required. And for that, karma, activity is required. And the word karma in Bhagavad Gita has to be is used again and again and again. In Bhagavad Gita, and it has to be understood contextually in each time. So karma is often sin. It means, in most cases, it means activities performed according to shastra, shastric directions. In other words, according to dharma. So the Krishna conscious solution to all world problems is to put Krishna in the center, aka Namanasa, and that is the panacea for all material problems. But that's not the main point. The main point is to be Krishna conscious and go to Krishna. So you may say, well, people aren't interested in that. They're interested in feeding the children. They're interested in material things. So, all right, for material things also, Krishna consciousness is the solution. Not shoving Krishna to the side pretending to be part of this society and actually becoming part of this actually demoniac society. If we're to be frank, then modern society is demoniac because it works on the principle of how we can be happy in this world. Maybe there's a little, what's that called? Lip service to God and religion. But the real aim is how I can be happy in this world. So really devotees have no business partaking in this whole mentality that we're benefiting the society by providing meals. And rather, we're supposed to show completely that first of all, that the whole attitude behind this society is ungodly. To develop more factories and industries and progress, and this way we'll be happy in the way. This is what the country needs. And we have no business partaking. Rather, we have to point out that this whole attitude, the whole approach, is seriously mistaken. So you can say this party, that party, political party, but they're all promoting different varieties of the same illusion, that by developing the country or by making arrangements, people can live happily in this world. Give reservations and build more railways and import oil, and they're all working under the same illusion and promoting the same illusion. So the Krishna conscious movement is meant for giving the real solution. Sarve sukhino bhavantu. Let everyone be happy. Everyone should be happy. In all times, all places, all circumstances. But the whole way of modern life is based on the illusion that we can be happy in this material world. And even if you say someone's a very good patriot, they dedicate their life for the country. Well, that also inherent in that is that, well, we're trying to promote India, but that means at the expense of Pakistan, Jai Hind. That means we don't say Pakistan Zindabad. It's opposite. India has to come up, that means we have to keep Pakistan down. But the actual Vedic aphorism is Sarve Sukhino Bhavantu. It doesn't say Sarve Bharatiya. Sarve, everyone, not only humans, even living beings in the form of animals and plants, they should all be considered. Because that's possible in Krishna consciousness. No one even thinks about that otherwise. No one's even thinking about the animals. Of course, there are cow gorakshaks who are trying to protect the cows. But what about the goats and the pigs and the buffaloes? They're also living beings. And the trees. Of course, priority is given to the cows. But why should any living being be slaughtered for the sake of the tongue? That should be considered and promoted. So really, Krishna consciousness gives the solution to all problems. And the center of that is thinking of Krishna, making Krishna consciousness the ultimate goal of life. And this system, or the system of social administration, which if properly administered, particularly adds or helps the cultivation of thinking always of Krishna, is the Varnashram system, which is mentioned in the previous verse and which Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport here. Now, it is possible to come to Krishna consciousness without Varnashram Dharma. And in fact, Varnashram Dharma in and of itself doesn't give rise to bhakti. Krishna bhakti janma, what is that? Krishna bhakti janma mool hoy sadhu sangha. The awakening of Krishna consciousness, the basis of that is association with devotees, not following Varnashram. One can follow Varnashram and go to hell. Chari Varnashrame jadi Krishna nahi bhaje svakama karite she rorave parimaje. That's Bengali saying, if you follow Varnashram very nicely, but you don't worship Krishna, then by doing all your duties very nicely, you go to hell. And that's based on a Bhagavatam verse. Can you remember that verse? Chari, what is it? Chari, no. That's from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I can't remember that verse just now. And there are many examples of that. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the example is given of one hunter who was not in Varnashram. Nowadays they call tribals as Hindus, but previously it was considered Hindu means caste, and those who are not Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, they're tribals or whatever. And actually their system of religion is, they worship all kinds of different things. So anyway, this was long before even the word Hindu was dreamed of. But Narad Muni uplifted a hunter. But he did have some culture. Maybe it was some natural inherent tendency to respect saintly people. Or it may have been from the broader culture beyond the jungles that he did respect a saintly person. He had that much culture. So Narad Muni uplifted him. And there are many examples in the modern age of Srila Prabhupada uplifted so many people who were completely outside any idea of the Varnashram system, most of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. And for that matter, Lingayats, they're presumably not part of the caste system, if you want to call the caste system Varnashram. It's the perverse development. But as you told me, they also have their own caste system, something like that. Anyway, I'm just making the point here that people without following Varnashram, they can take to Krishna consciousness. But even then, there may be some kind of stimulus in their life. Of course, generally people who take to Krishna consciousness, they have done so in a previous life. Tatratang buddhi samyogam, we find in Gita that people, well, that refers to people who are born in the homes of wealthy Vaishyas, pious Vaishyas or Brahmanas, and then due to the activities of their previous life, the labhate pauravadehikam, they revive the consciousness of their previous life. But at least my observation is that in the Western countries, of course, you don't know so much about this being from India, but in the Western world, the religious cultures, which are more personal, we tend to get more people becoming devotees from them. I specifically mean Catholicism and Orthodox Christianity, in which there's worship of icons is very big in Orthodox religion, and worship of saints with statues and pictures, whereas in hardcore Protestant Catholicism, they don't believe in having any pictures, they don't worship any saints, they don't have respect for any authority system. It's like Ritvikism. It's just, we believe in Jesus and the Bible, and no one in between. So, generally speaking, we find in cultures which are closer to the devotional bhakti culture, that people do take it up more. That's a general observation. Of course, in America, many Jews took to Krishna consciousness also in the heyday of the movement in the 60s and 70s, but I don't know. I have almost no knowledge of Jewish culture whatsoever. Anyway, it's a general observation that people, they have a tendency to, more of a tendency to conceive of God in a personal way, and then they can more easily take to Krishna consciousness. Oh, a very good example is that in the Buddhist country, it's very difficult to preach Krishna consciousness because they have no idea of God, literally. In Thailand, I was there for some time, they have no word in their language which corresponds to the word God in English. They have no concept. They don't think Buddha is God. They think it's a great offense to say like that. They're very difficult to preach to them. There may be other factors that help to stimulate, you know, say there is some kind of stimulus or background. Not in every case. I mean, people have faith in God at home, they're raised to believe in God. But there are many people who are raised in atheistic homes who also took to Krishna consciousness. So, but there is a pattern that Krishna also gives the idea of people who have pious natures. So certain cultures, they may not be directly Vedic culture, but they may foster some kind of piety or even impious things. Some hippies, ex-hippies, they said that taking hallucinatory drugs gave them an experience of consciousness beyond the normal, which stimulated their interest in ways of investigating consciousness beyond the everyday. So some people say that drugs helped them to come to Krishna consciousness. That might have been the beginning of a long journey, but in and of themselves, certainly drugs don't help one to come to Krishna consciousness. Or it may be just by their nature. If people are very simple-minded, that's one of the qualifications of a Vaishnava. They're simple in as much as they can easily accept. Yes, there is a God. Yes, I have to serve Him. Yes, these people are good. Whereas other people are very doubting and untrusting. And it becomes more difficult for them to take to Krishna consciousness. Of course, very few people are actually very simple. If you dig a little deep, you'll find there are piles of material desires in the hearts of everyone, even if they seem very simple and straightforward. Suffering can be a good impetus for people to come to Krishna consciousness, and in most cases, I would think, or if we discuss with devotees, we'll find that a sense of material suffering was an impetus for them to look beyond their day-to-day life and try to, when they can't find a solution at the ordinary level, then they want to look to God like this. So these are not in and of themselves stimuli for Krishna consciousness, but they may help. It may be that someone, for instance, is in some Christian culture, but then he finds, I can give myself as an example. I was raised as a Roman Catholic, but started to think a bit, well, why does, if God is all good, then why does he throw most people into hell forever? For instance, I had my doubts. So then that may start a search, and then when we come in contact with good knowledge of our actual situation in relationship to God, as we find in Krishna consciousness, that Krishna doesn't throw everyone into hell forever. That's a misconception. There may be punishment, but that is for rectification. And he gives us chances again and again, life after life. So I'm just trying to make the point here that it may not that we come through Krishna, through Varnashram to Krishna consciousness. And especially in the modern age, the Varnashram system is broken down. And there may be other stimuli arranged by Krishna that we come. There are many devotees also say that in their life there were it seemed to be so many coincidences, which actually couldn't be a coincidence, which things happened in their life, which just, it was almost as if Krishna, and actually it's a fact, from behind was making all arrangements to bring them to Krishna consciousness. So people can come to Krishna consciousness without it. Then why do we emphasize it? Why do you emphasize Varnashram? Because it is a systematic method for bringing people. Whatever their present level of consciousness, if they're within the Varnashram system, which is specifically centered on Krishna and attainment of Krishna consciousness, doesn't force everyone to become fully Krishna conscious immediately, may even allow meat eating, under circuit, meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, intoxication, may be allowed for certain people at certain low levels of consciousness, but it's all clearly with the aim to uplift people. And those who don't participate in it, who are unqualified to participate in it, they also have their place outside the village, their own villages, chandala villages, or in the jungles. They also have, so everything is, it's a system, it's a systematic method to bring people to Krishna consciousness with the long term in mind. It may not even be in this lifetime. And everyone's given prasadam. At least they can take prasadam. Even if they don't want to chant Hare Krishna, minimally they can take prasadam. And that's even given to the dogs and everyone. Prasadam, minimal, should be given to everyone. Not just to children at school, but to everyone. Everyone needs Krishna's prasadam. Everyone needs to hear the holy names. So it's a systematic method to bring people to this point, but it has to, of always thinking of Krishna, but that has to be emphasized. Otherwise, if it's not emphasized, then, or if the devotees don't do it, if the devotees don't preach this, then who's going to preach it? If the devotees don't preach it, then who else is going to preach it? And if they preach something which other people are preaching, uplift the country, feed the poor, social uplift, without putting Krishna clearly in the center, then they're failing in their duty, which is to bring people to Krishna consciousness. So We may say, well, what's the harm? But there is harm in devotees not preaching Krishna consciousness very clearly. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out, when defining the term ahimsa, it's a very good quality, sometimes translated as non-violence. But then he's, so non-violence, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur defined hingsa as stopping the preaching of Krishna consciousness. If you may think that, well, hingsa, violence, means just you walk up to someone and slap them in the face. That's hingsa, isn't it? There are advertisements all over Bangalore for someone slapping something like that. You must have seen them on the street. I don't know what it's for, something. Have you seen that? You must have seen. I've only been in Bangalore for 2 days and I've seen everywhere. There's this, some advertisement of someone slapping them in the face or tweaking their ear or something like that. So that's obvious violence. But another kind of, that's violence by commission, but there's also violent crimes of commission and crimes of omission. So commission means when you do something wrong, and a crime of omission is when you fail to do something which you should do. So for instance, if you have the medicine, you're given the medicine to bring to someone else, which will cure them, otherwise they're going to die. And you don't give it to them. That's a crime. You say, well, I didn't do anything wrong. Right? He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't walk up to the person and slap them in the face. But he failed to do what was required for their benefit. So that becomes a crime also. So the devotees, they are enjoin, jare deko tare koho Krishna upadesh. Wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them the instructions of Krishna. And if they fail to do that, then they're committing violence. You may say, well, we do that also. But no, it's not that it's a part-time occupation. It's the only occupation for devotees, is to distribute Bhagavad Gita as it is, and to speak the message of Krishna. And people may not like it. It's difficult to give. If we tell them something that they like to hear, such as feeding the children, because it makes them feel good, I'm doing something good to help others. But they don't know what is good. They've defined good in terms of material so-called benefit. So they like to feel they're good, and they give money, and everyone feels happy, except Krishna. Because he tells us to preach Krishna consciousness. So if Krishna's not satisfied, then everything becomes useless. So there is great harm in diverting the energy, the resources, and the manpower, and the money that is going on in the name of Srila Prabhupada to endeavors which Srila Prabhupada not only didn't endorse, but he spoke against. Srila Prabhupada didn't only not open hospitals, but he said that it's foolishness. He criticized some sadhu who had opened a hospital. He said, what's this? Sadhu is not meant for opening hospitals. So, tasmad ekena manasa bhagavan satvatam patihi shrotavya kirtitavyascha dheya pujascha nityada. With one-pointed attention, one should always hear about, glorify, remember the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. So here in Bhagavatam, Varnashram is discussed, but always keep in the center, to remember Krishna. That is the real point. And to remember Krishna, we really have to make an endeavor. It's not coming spontaneously to us. Should do, but we're in Maya. So, since time immemorial. So therefore we have to make an endeavor. We have systems also to revive our Krishna consciousness. Rising early, attending kirtans, performing service for Krishna, hearing, systematic hearing, what is it? Hearing, shrotavya, kirtitavya, chanting, remembering, worshipping, systematic way of doing so. And we may think, ekena manasa, that sounds just boring, just one thing all the time. Sometimes people ask, why all the time? Why all the time? The same thing. Huh? Especially in modern life, there are so many varieties one can indulge in. The internet has opened the possibilities of the world. There are all kinds of things you can do out there on the internet. But we just do the same thing every day. Same mantras, or same mantras, but especially one mantra. Why the same? Well, it may seem the same, but actually Krishna is Akhila Rasamrita Sindhu. He's the ocean of all nectarian mellows and tastes. So it's not that it may seem stereotype, but actually by hearing and chanting about Krishna, the mind becomes immersed in all the delicious varieties of remembering Krishna and who Krishna is. And actually, in every kirtan, or all the activities, there's a different flavor. Isn't there when we're singing Sangsara Davan Alalirhaloka? There's a certain flavor there. Meditation on Srila Prabhupada and his various aspects of how he delivers us from this material world, how he's always singing and chanting and dancing in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasy, kirtan. So if we apply our mind, ekena manasa, if we apply our mind to this, then we'll find there's so much transcendental, delicious variety therein. So yeah, then we sing Narasimha prayers. There's different, somewhat different bhav is there. So we're praying to Narasimha for protection. And Tulsi kirtan. It's all different moods in everything we do. Everything is delicious. The taste. We say we have to get a taste for Krishna consciousness. Ruchi. So a taste means we're just like the taste on the tongue, there are different tastes. There's six kinds of tastes and four kinds of consistencies of foodstuff. So in Krishna consciousness, we come in contact with Krishna. And although to people who are trying to be happy by indulging in the tastes of mundane sensual enjoyment, Krishna consciousness might seem to be stereotyped, but it's actually very blissful and full of varieties of transcendental tastes. Hare Krishna. I'll finish here. Does anyone have any question, please? Hare Krishna.